Thank you for listening to this lesson presented by Reverend Millage Mosby. We affirm that this lesson has inspired and uplifted you and given you practical tools you can use to divinely guide you in every aspect of your life. We give thanks that as a listener of our online Sunday lessons, you are open to donating to support this web ministry. Please click on the donate button and follow your inner guidance. Thank you, and we continue to hold you in the light.
Good morning. This little piece of paper that just fell out of my portfolio said, "My mind is like a racing engine tearing itself apart because it is not connected to the work it is designed to do." Some TV show I got that from. I don't remember. That's pretty deep, though, isn't it, right? My mind is like a racing engine tearing itself apart because it is not connected to the work it is designed to do. That's really powerful. Yeah. And in this talk this morning, the very end of it especially is coming from the Gnostic works, specifically the Book of Thomas. But we're going to do some other things leading up to that. But again, just to emphasize the point that none of this is designed to make us feel where we are now that we're not doing what we need to do. It's just helping us to understand the next step of where we need to get to. Does that make sense? So as you're hearing it, you know, don't say to yourself, "Oh, you know, geez, I'm not doing any of that." You know, it's a process of just helping us understand that there's much more than we're seeing. And the title of the talk this morning is The Power to Heal, basically the power to heal yourself. And in the book Care of the Soul by Thomas More, he says, "It is commonplace for writers to point out that we live in a time of deep division in which mind is separated from body and spirituality is at odds with materiality. But how do we get out of this split? We can't just think ourselves through it because thinking itself is part of the problem. What we need is a way out of dualistic attitudes. We need a third possibility, and that third possibility is soul. What we need is soul in the middle, holding together mind and body, ideas and life and spirituality in the world." So that's what we're going to kind of talk about, this process of how do I move from just pure personality to spirituality, but using my soul as the connection of that process. So in order to receive and experience the divine healing power, and that's what you can hear that quite often, the divine healing power within, we need to learn how to live from our soul. And it's interesting to note how when we hear someone, say, play a musical instrument or sing a certain way or whatever, you know, that person moves us and we'll say that person is coming from their soul. You know, you've heard that expression, all right? Meaning soul is a way of expressing that is inspiring, it's spiritually provocative, it's empowering, heartening, and sometimes even miraculous. But on the other hand, approaching life without a soul connection most likely leads to having experiences that are disheartening, discouraging, and deeply saddening. And we may ask ourselves, how often do we miss out on receiving the infinite potential of the divine healing power of God that is already within us, just waiting for us to accept it, because we couldn't see past our fearful interpretations and judgments about what we perceive as happening in our lives, okay? And, you know, healing is probably the single most powerful force of all of the new thought movement. You know, science of mind, religious science, divine science, unity, all of those movements. If you read the origin, all of those people who originated those came from some deep healing. So we know that Myrtle Fillmore, who's one of our, you know, co-founders, you know, she had tuberculosis and she was in her 40s, I think, and was told that she had a year to live. But in those days, tuberculosis was catastrophic, all right? But she went and she heard a man speak, and he said, you know, we do not inherit sickness. They thought back in those days, you inherited tuberculosis. But when she tapped in, she had heard that we do not inherit sickness, you know, as children of God. She tapped into that. Myrtle was what you call a natural mystic. You know, there's a sign, you've heard me say this before, a scientific mystic, natural mystic. A natural mystic just hears and accepts. A A scientific mystic hears and has to do experiments before they can accept. Right? So Myrtle was a natural mystic, and when she heard that, she lived till she was 80-something, right? Because she healed herself of that tuberculosis. And then Charles Fillmore had a more obvious healing in that through a childhood disease, one of his legs was shorter than the other, but he, watching his wife, he said, now he's a scientific mystic. So he said, I have to set up a scientific experiment. And so he sat in the same spot, the same time, every day for the same amount of time and prayed. And over time, what happened was that that leg, this is a grown man, that shriveled up leg filled out and grew almost to the length of his other leg. That's the power of prayer, okay? So, and there are many such miraculous stories that are recorded like that. Now, in Jesus' ministries, out of the 33 miracles he performed, 24 of them had to do with healing. And it's important for us to realize that when studying the works of Jesus or any other enlightened master, that they're not the originators or the creators of that divine healing force within us. Jesus' work and teachings was to bring about a greater awareness of that divine healing force as an example of what we can accomplish also, which is what he said. All that you see me doing, you will do also, and greater than this. And actually, he didn't use the word will, he said shall. That word shall means when you come into that state of consciousness, all right? So, and as we explore the divine healing force, it is important for us to realize that God is not some big person up in the sky sitting there determining who will be sick and who will be well. We've often heard it said when somebody is struggling with an illness, well, it's just God's will. And we've, right? Okay. And however, we want to dispel the notion that there's any reason for God to want us to be sick. It's extremely important to our spiritual growth and to our creating a closer relationship with this divine presence we call God for us to realize that sickness and death is not God's will, regardless of what the Orthodox Church has told us. Okay, in the Orthodox English Church service, this is what they will read to the sick. Wherefore, whatsoever your sickness is, know you certainly that it is God's visitation. Meaning, it's God's will. All right? Now, if this were a true statement, it would mean that everything we did to try to heal or cure ourselves would be in opposition to God's will. It just doesn't make any sense. And so it would mean that the whole medical profession and all the healing arts were going against God's will. So, and I believe that many of the healing arts we know about, you know, the medical profession, of course, but acupuncture, you know, chiropractic, all these other healing arts that are out there came about because there was an intuitive knowing that this it was our divine right to always be whole and well, right? And instead of believing it, that it's God's will to make you sick or in any other way cause you to be troubled or anything like that, it makes much more sense to believe that God is a spark of life within you, the divine healing force within you, and then acknowledge and embrace that force so you can turn your dis-ease into ease, right? Both in your body, mind, and affairs. So this whole process, healing process, is not just about healing our bodies, but it's about healing everything that's going on in our lives. Now, in the 10th chapter of Matthew, you know, to continue with this idea that it's definitely not God's will, is that Jesus was giving instructions to his disciples about what their duties were, all right? So in Matthew 10:8, he said that what you're to do is go out to heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the leper, and cast out all demons. Again, if it was God's will for you to be sick, Jesus would be going directly against God's will, all right? So that's why it just doesn't make any sense for us to ever believe that this is God's will. Is that okay? And I'm saying that to say most of us are saying here, well, yeah, I didn't really believe that. But there is some old Orthodox stuff, I think, in everybody in here, you know, we've all come from other religions where that might have been, you know, the idea. And as I read in last Sunday's lessons, it's recorded in Jeremiah 31:3, that the Lord said, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued my faithfulness to you. Now, this is the part I like. Again, I will build you, and you shall be rebuilt. right? Now, I repeat, God said, I will build you and you shall be rebuilt. Now, from a scientific standpoint, this is what a doctor, Dr. Richard Cabot, said about that particular idea. That 3/4 of all diseases are cured without victims ever knowing they ever had them. That means our body is constantly healing itself of stuff we don't even know we have, all right? He says, proof of this contention is found in post-mortem examinations, which time after time reveal indelible and unmistakable traces of diseases which the subject had conquered unknowingly. Isn't that incredible to just understand that? That your body is always healing itself, all right? And the body simply has a super wisdom which is biased in favor of life rather than death. It doesn't win every time, often needs our help, but it is 10 times as powerful as medicine's imitation. And it is a force that doesn't make as many wrong diagnoses as I did when I was practicing. What is this powerful force? It is God, the divine healing force on which all of us depend in order to be here today. So, you know, now you're hearing both from a spiritual perspective and a scientific perspective that is for us to be healthy and whole all the time. And that is the nature of God. It is the divine healing force that is always working to continuously bring our body and mind back to their original state of wholeness. Now, it's written in John 5:17, for those taking notes, my Father is always working to this day, and I too am working. Those are verses you've heard. So what it says is that even when we are not feeling at our best, the Spirit of the Lord is always at work within us, all right, bringing us back to a state of wholeness. And whereas we can choose to not work with the healing, guiding, protecting, life-giving presence of God, God cannot choose to not be God. You get what I'm saying? So we can say, oh, no, I'm ignoring this. I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. Whatever it is, I'm going to deal with this worry and upset and pain and stuff that's going on. But while we're not accepting this healing force, the healing force cannot make that same decision. God cannot make a decision not to be God. That's a powerful thought, okay? So sometimes, and I've talked to people even recently who said to me, you know, with what I've been struggling with or watching somebody else struggle with, it was challenging my thought that God was present. Well, I don't want that thought, you to ever be challenged by that thought. God is always being God, all right? And the idea that you have to understand is God has no ability to choose not to be God, all right? That's the important part. So God is life. God is a life force that the doctor was referring to when he said the body simply has a super wisdom which is biased in the favor of life rather than death. And it is our spiritual work to constantly practice being mindful of this divine presence at work within us so that we do not become victims of life circumstances. So it's sort of like the idea is that Sam's favorite word is to contemplate. So you're always contemplating on this life force. It's like, Linda, when you said you went up and you saw the sunrise, you know, is that once you have seen that sunrise, you cannot unsee it. So it's sort of like the same idea as you're always, so stuff happens, but if your mind goes from the stuff that happens right back to the idea that this divine healing force is always at work within me. You know, so it's, we always have this choice. And that's what the original thing I read said about, we have to get away from this dualistic thinking. Dualistic means that you will accept love, but you will also accept fear. You get it? And you're switching back and forth between them all the time. That's being dualistic, all right? When you are singular in mind, you grasp the idea that God is the force working within me all the time, and that's the only thought that you work with, all right? So it's important for us to hold to that idea. And again, this idea that our spiritual practice is constantly being mindful is recorded in Luke 21:36. Be on guard so that your heart is not weighed down with recklessness and drunkenness on the worries of this life. All right? And drunkenness, you know, if we know when stuff is bothering us, it is like we're drunk. You know, that we're just wallowing, you know, wandering around in this, whatever this that this bothers us. So he says, be a guard, you're not weighed down with that recklessness and drunkenness and the worries of life, and that the day does not catch you unexpectedly like a trap, for it will come upon all of us who live on the face of the earth. It says, it is going to happen. So be alert at all times, praying constantly that you may have the strength to escape all these things that will take place and to stand before the Son of God. All right. And then we say in unity, when we're saying the Lord's Prayer, you know, in Scripture it says, do not lead us into temptation. But we know that God will never lead us into temptation. That's why in unity we say, do not leave us in temptation. Okay, because we lead ourselves into temptation, but we need God to, you know, to help us to make a different decision. So it's important that we hold firmly within our minds a realization that when we are expressing, when we're expressing a challenge, you know, we're having a challenge in our lives and things are not going the way we want, that our salvation comes from knowing there's a divine healing force within me. Because stuff is going to happen, right? It is going to happen. What does the T-shirt say? Stuff happens. Right? So so we have to understand that our salvation when stuff happens is to keep that thought in mind that there's a divine healing force within me. Not just healing my body, but also healing my mind and my emotions and my feelings and all the things that, you know, stir me up in life. Okay? So salvation, if we go to the dictionary, salvation is defined as the realization and demonstration of life, truth, and love as being supreme over all, carrying with it the destruction of the illusion of sickness. And that's a hard one for us who've been through surgeries and other things we're going through, is to say that this is an illusion, okay? But it's you know, sort of like the idea of, you ever cut yourself? You're out doing something, you know, whatever, and you're very busy, and you cut yourself, and you keep on going busy, and you know, and then somebody says, you're bleeding. You go, oh, I am? And then as soon as you see it, right? But before that, you were not aware of it, all right? So there is this, you know, there's this concept, well, we're talking spiritually, but also you keep hearing me refer back to quantum physics, that all this is an illusion, you know? But because it's real to us, we experience the reality of whatever it is we're going through, all right? So as we investigated in last week's lesson, it's the negative judgmental sort of mental emotional process that we use and we engage in, that we are entertained, that causes us to disconnect from our soul. So stuff happens and right away we just get fully engaged in it, right? And what we do, as you've heard me say before, is in our minds, we create a drama often that's greater than the thing itself. And we take it all the way down the road. This is, oh, this is good. This is going to happen. We just walk, run down the road with it. And that's all in our heads, all right? And when that happens, we disconnect ourselves from our souls. And more than that, we're disconnecting ourselves, we're disconnecting our mind from our heart. Because our mind is what gets all wrapped up in, you know, the dualistic thinking between one. But our heart is that chakra that always is striving for love. All right? So if our mind is connected from our heart, it would be like Joseph being connected from Mary. Because Joseph was wisdom, Mary was love. Okay? And we know when those two are not together, stuff happens. All right? But when they're together, they produce Christ ideas. Does that make sense? So if you keep your mind and your heart together, you keep producing Christ ideas. Those are the ideas you get where you go, wow, how did I think of that? You know, who's had that experience? You know, so all of us. So in the midst of this disconnect, we block the healing, divine healing force within us from doing what it naturally does, which is to heal us. So when our mind and our heart disconnect, we block that force. The healing that would normally happen doesn't happen. Okay? So, and yes, I do realize that this is a hard lesson because being judgmental is such a common practice for the way we think. It's just simply what we do. Letting go of the practice of being judgmental is really more than we can really imagine. You know, I challenge my students when we talk about this in class, believe it or not. And I say, when you get up and you leave class, see if you can walk completely from Blayton Hall all the way to Marlboro Hall and not judge anybody on that whole process. But it's just hard for us, all right? And yes, I do realize, you know, that this is the process we have to work on. But again, as we talked about last week, negative, fearful, judgmental thoughts and actions are detrimental and disruptive to our movement along the spiritual path. This judgmental thinking invades and disrupts the evolution of our soul's journey back to its state of wholeness. So I'm not saying don't be judgmental, don't do the things we normally do, but just realize when you do that, you just disrupted yourself on the path back to spirituality, back to the sense of wholeness. Now remember, I said back to spirituality because we are spiritual beings, say it with me, having a human experience. I'm hesitating because Pam and I just watched something on TV where we heard them say that, and we were going to some show. We said, "That's it," all right? But it was interesting hearing it on this movie or whatever we're watching, and I don't remember what it was. Okay, but that's the key, is that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And again, when we get wrapped up in judgmental thinking, it disrupts that whole idea of remembering that. In addition, we are learning that it's extremely important to our salvation that we understand that the potentially troubling conditions in our mind, body, life, and affairs are not because of a punishing, unforgiving God in the sky. The potentially troubling experiences that we have are a result of the law of mind action. Thoughts held in mind produce after their own kind. And so that's where we have to take responsibility for the things that are challenging our lives, that somehow there's something going on inside of me that's creating this, right? Now, self-observation without condemnation. And a lot of what's causing your life by something going, it's usually not in your conscious realm of mind. It's usually in a subconscious realm of mind. That's why the prayer, "Father, reveal in me that which needs to be revealed," to bring that stuff up. And a lot of times you say, well, nothing's coming up. But then somebody will do something that will cause it to come up. Right? You know, you asked and the Father gave you the opportunity. Okay? So this is why it's so imperative that we do not allow our mind to stray away from knowing its true source, okay? Its true nature. And again, as we read in Luke 21:36, be on guard that your heart is not weighed down with the worries of life. All right. Now, this typical ego habit of mentally and emotionally straying away from the divine truth about ourselves that causes us to falsely believe that overcoming whatever this experience is impossible. Has anybody ever had that experience? What I'm going through, it's impossible to overcome this. Okay. And again, thinking, you know, how will I ever make it through this? This being whatever it is that you're struggling with. We have all had that happen to us. Even if it was only for a little bit until we got some more information, but the thing comes up, you kind of go, God, how am I going to ever get through this? Okay? But just think of how many times you have felt that this situation is impossible, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, an answer came, and you were done. You got through it, right? And that's why we're here today. Because we've run through many so-called impossible situations, but out of the blue, boom. And normally what it comes to you is when you're just at the end of your rope. At the end of the rope means at the end of what your intellect is able to figure out. And you submit to it that I just don't know what to do. Now, at that point, your intellect is settled down because it has no idea how to get yourself out of this. And then spirit can come up, right? It come up either directly through you or through somebody else or something else that gives you an answer to move through that. And this is evidence of the activity of God constantly being present in your life, even while you are proclaiming impossible. Instead of concentrating on being mindful of the one presence, one power within you that is always at work to bring about some healing. All right. And as we read in Matthew 19:26, Jesus responds to the term impossible is with men, this is impossible. But with God, what? All things are possible. And in Mark 9:23, he said, all things are possible to the one who believes. All right, now this is getting ready to ease us. We've got a little bit more to go, but we're getting ready to ease into this Gospel of Thomas idea. Okay, so the revealing word explains that to believe is to accept an idea as already being true in your mind, body, life, and affairs. So when you say, I believe, that means you already, in your whole being, you know that that's going to happen. Okay? So the question is, how do we get to this state of mind where we believe that all things are possible? Well, to answer this question, we're going to go to the book of Thomas. And to help you understand, if you don't know this, the idea of King Constantine around 300 or 400 after Christ created the Nicene order to create a book, a Bible, that could bring some stability to this young religion coming up called Christianity. But in the process of doing that, they edited out many books, which you call the lost books of the Bible, but they also edited the verses that were still in there, right? So that we're not hearing the truth as it was originally presented. So, and again, so the book of Thomas is one of the Coptic texts, translations from the Nag Hammadi library, okay? Now, the key to this state of mind where we believe that all things are possible is to begin by meditating on the idea Jesus shared that the kingdom of heaven is within you and outside of you, okay? We live and breathe and have our being in this idea called the kingdom of heaven. Remember, you said it's not up there, it's not over there, it is within you. Actually, in the book of Thomas, it says, if it was up there, the birds would get to it before we did. And if it was down there, the fish would get to it before we did. He said, it is neither up there nor down there. It is in you. It is in the midst of you. So it is not a state that you have to get to. It is more just knowing that you are in it. Now listen to how it's explained in the book of Thomas. When you come to know yourselves, then you will become known, and you will realize that it is you who are sons and daughters of the living Father. But if you do not come to know yourselves, you will dwell in poverty, and it is you who are that poverty. Okay, now let me explain. So to know yourself is to gain insight into your own ultimate divine identity, which is identical to the quality of God. So when you truly know yourself, you know there's an aspect within you that's identical to the quality of God. Remember the bucket out of the ocean. Okay, now this is often achieved through meditation, contemplation, you know, of divine ideas. So, you know, while you're get your own favorite spiritual thought, whatever that is for you, and that's what's going through your mind all the time. Okay, it's a process that when you find your mind drifting off, you're being on guard. As you bring your mind back by using this particular spiritual thought to meditate on. Does that make sense? Okay, but this verse is also saying if you do not come to know yourself, you will dwell in poverty, meaning the lack of knowledge and understanding of the true nature of who you really are. And not only will you dwell in lack and limitation and a lack of understanding, what we call spiritual ignorance, but your life will eventually become the consequences of that ignorance. So that's what it said. Not only will you dwell in poverty, but the poverty is what you will be. Okay? So when you have your life just constantly in this turmoil, then what happens is that not only is turmoil happening to you, but you now are turmoil. All right? So how do we change what we believe about ourselves? How do we evolve beyond the unwanted aspects of ourselves? Well, in Matthew 7:7, we read, ask and you will receive. Now, we get ready to get to this idea of these missing verses of what we are used to. But we all have our experience. All of us know that we have asked and asked and asked and not gotten what we wanted. Am I right? We prayed and prayed and prayed and not gotten what we wanted. Now, we've had times when we prayed and got what we want. So you say, well, how come I got what I want this time, but I didn't get what I want the other time? Because when you got what you want, it's because mind and body and everything was in alignment, and you believed with all your heart, mind, and soul that this was going to happen. All right? But when you're not getting what you're asking for, it's because that alignment is not happening. Does that make sense? Okay. So somehow we ask and have, but it explains in the Gospel of Thomas that the secret is the asking is not with your voice. The asking is not with your voice. You know the prayer that we like to do out here like that? God's not hearing any of that. Because God doesn't speak in that language. Now that's scary, isn't it? What is happening is that language is attuning your heart with spirit. And that attunement is what's talking to God. So that's why when you get, I don't know if you've ever been to a Buddhist session where they're chanting and they're going, you know, just sort of this heavy chanting. I've actually seen it in TV shows with the Muslims, and they're going with this chant and this movement. And what's happening is that their whole being is coming into alignment. When we were in Turkey and we saw the whirling dervishes, you know, those whirling dervishes, you know, and most of us, we turn like this, we're dizzy, right? But, you know, they just whirling and whirling. I think it must have went on for an hour or more. How much? 45 minutes, you know, and not only were they whirling together, but if one of them changed, they all changed at the exact same time. They were totally in tune with each other. That was their form of prayer that was bringing all that heart, mind, soul in alignment, all right? So when you just pray, oh God, Father, please give me, I need this new car or whatever, there's no alignment happening because there's something in you that's going, well, I don't know if I can afford a new car. And you know what I'm saying? We're going through all of this stuff inside of us. So the words are not, in the asking, the words are not what's important, okay? It says that the asking must be in a language that the unified field in which we live and breathe and have our being recognizes. The field does not recognize your voice. It recognizes the language of your heart. And the language of your heart is activated when your thought and emotion around that which you are asking for are in alignment. Did everybody catch that? Okay. So words alone aren't going to do it. Your thought and your emotion create a feeling that the universe understands. Because feeling creates vibration. And the universe is vibration. So when you just speak, that's why I say in the beginning was the Word and the Word was with God. Well, Michael Patterson, many of you do not know, who was a great musician, a pianist, said that Word was not a word like we know. It was Om. It was a vibration. Okay? So when your thought and emotions combine and create the feeling in your heart as if the prayer has already been answered, then you are speaking in a language that the unified field or the kingdom of God understands. Does that make practical sense? Okay. Now, I'm going to end with a version of John, note takers, John 16, 23 through 24, from the Gospel of Thomas that has two hidden verses that were edited out of the Bibles that we look at today. Okay. But yet are powerfully significant to understand how this asking, you know, must be done to be effective. So here it is. And again, this is something I'm going to be working with more in other lessons. Here's how it goes. All things that you ask straightly, directly, from inside my name. Now, this is Jesus talking to his disciples, okay? And so inside my name, we know that name means nature. So Jesus is saying, when you ask it in my nature, from my state of consciousness, you will be given. So let me say, all things you ask straightly and directly from inside my name, you will be given. All right. So you got to be clear about what you're asking. But also said in Scripture, this is a Scripture we have in our Bibles today, so far you have not done this. That's exactly what it's saying. You have not asked it straightly, directly, and you have not asked it in my name, in my nature. So far, you have not done this. Now, here are the verses that were taken out. Ask without hidden motive and be surrounded and enfolded by your answer. be enveloped by what you desire until your gladness is full. They took those out of Scripture. They edited it out in King Constantine's Nicene ordering. Took them out, but they're extremely important. I mean, you're asking, you feel the whole energy of what it is you want. You are living and breathing and being that which you are asking for. As if it is already what? Happened. Okay? So when through constant practice and contemplation, you come to a mental emotion place space where you can ask in that way, you will receive what you ask for. Amen.